Hi, and welcome to the news. I'm Neil Ronahan. With me, as seemingly always, Patrick Barnett and Zachary Miller.
Hello.
Toasty!
That's what I always thought he said when I was younger.
Like Michael Jackson.
That was one of those things that, like, I found out that he was saying Toasty. I'm like, oh, that does make a lot of sense.
I think I like it better now that it's Michael Jackson.
Yeah. But, I mean, because you got to think, like, you know, he just comes on really quickly. I was usually playing this on a shitty TV.
Right.
So it would just sound like, Toasty! Anyway, enough Mortal Kombat talk
for
now.
We just lost listeners.
Yeah. Was that in the new Mortal Kombat game? Did they actually have a...
The Toasty?
Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, that's rad. I need to play that game one of these days. Maybe it'll come to Wii U.
Yeah.
It's coming to Vita, I know, where you can, like, wipe blood off the screen or something stupid like that.
Oh, see, maybe I'll got by it so I have something to play on my Vita.
Well, it's not out now. And there was also that, like, Game of the Year edition. Maybe I'll bite on that eventually.
Yeah, I saw that in Target. I was like, oh, but I already have the core game.
Yeah. So anyway, we're talking about Nintendo stuff, as we are wont to do. And let's start off and talk about this... The flavor of the month, which we kind of all realized last week, is the greatest thing to come out of Nintendo in years.
So fucking awesome.
Kid Icarus Uprising.
Everything I've ever said about that game has been incorrect.
Yeah. See that latest trailer? It's kind of incredible. I've been basically at the edge of my mailbox all week waiting for the review copy to show up. As of Wednesday the 14th, it has not arrived, but I am hopeful that it'll be here soon. And so that means by the time we record next week... I shall have hopefully put up a review, as I imagine the embargo would be sometime next week.
Nice.
As the game comes out in 9 days.
Now that is awesome.
It comes out on a Friday, right?
That's weird. It's weird. Nintendo's actually doing a lot of Friday releases upcoming, which is kind of a weird trend. Because they got Kid Icarus, I believe, is coming out on Friday the 23rd. I know Spirit Camera is coming out on Friday the 13th. And I believe Xenoblade is actually coming out on April 6th, but I'm not entirely sure.
Crush 3D also came out on a Friday, but...
Yeah, I don't know if that really counts, because that just seemed like GameStop was like, oh, really? Sega, you want to do an exclusive with us? We had no idea. Neither did anyone else who worked at GameStop. But, May 20th is when Mario Tennis Open is coming out, which is a Sunday, so... I don't know. The Friday release. Nintendo just basically is like, I like this day. How about we release the game then? But that's Christmas.
Right.
We'll just do it.
Do it.
But anyway, the news with Kid Icarus now is that these AR cards are probably going to be hot as shit. I know I was talking to Aaron about this, and some of the stuff from GDC and like the Game Informer exclusive are going up on eBay for, like, I think... close to $100. Like, it's absurd. Because we did find out during GDC that the cards will only really be available through specific events.
Right.
And they've kind of revealed what those events will be. At GameStop tournaments, you'll be able to get them. At events such as PAX East and PAX Prime, you'll be able to get some. There's a Club Nintendo thing going on right now that you can get 3 for free. There will be some distributed in Nintendo Power and Game Informer. And I think that's about it. It's kind of weird.
I already signed up for my Club Nintendo ones.
Yeah, I should be getting them in about 2 months.
Yep, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it's the kind of thing, I'm not bothered that it's going to take so long.
No, me neither.
Like, I don't think this AR card thing is going to be such a big part of the game. Like, I think I might engage a little bit of my collectorness, and at PAX East, I'll probably be going batshit crazy over these things, but...
So this won't be the next Skylanders?
I was just going to say
I don't think it can be. Like, Skylanders, you actually had characters that were toys, and, like, you level up those characters. And these, it's just like, collect them all. What do they do? You can watch them come out of the card and fight. I think you get, like, currency and maybe some weapons and stuff, but it's not really game-changing. It's a bonus, which
right.
I like it as a bonus. And maybe we will see them be sold. Who knows? I don't know. I sure as shit don't know. But,
do you think they're going to be bigger in Japan where they're selling them in the... They're like the chocolate bars come with them, I think.
No.
Isn't that...
Of course.
I would imagine so. I mean, it seems like a thing that could catch on in Japan. But I don't really know. I'm curious to see how it's all going to shake out with the cards, because it seems like a big wild card.
Oh, my God.
Kid Icarus comes out. But the game in general feels kind of like a wild card. Like, I don't know how well it'll sell, because it is kind of like, I mean, it's Kid Icarus. He's an IP, I guess. Or it's an IP. But, like, I don't know. He hasn't had a game since 91. So who knows? It's more or less a new IP, but it seems like Nintendo's putting a lot behind it.
People are going to be like, hey, that guy was in Smash Bros.
Yeah, in all honesty, that's where the similarities lie. Not really in, hey, he was in this game on NES in the 80s. It's more like, he was in Brawl. And, I mean, I think that might do well.
Sure.
For the fact that it is, you know, made by the same guy who made Brawl and has a lot of, you know, stylistic things from Brawl. The multiplayer is supposedly Brawl, but a third-person game.
And Brawl is awesome.
Yeah, Brawl is a great game, and I hope that Kid Icarus will be too. And we'll hopefully be talking about it next week and the week after that, and hopefully after that we will still all like it.
Yes.
The other news that we got, an exclusive out of GDC, is that Mad Dog McCree, everyone's favorite or least favorite FMV game, is coming to eShop, which, I don't really know why that makes sense.
Me neither.
But okay.
You're going to have to tap the bad guys. I had Mad Dog McCree back on, like, DOS. And it's such a shitty game. I mean, it really is. It's just a scene, and bad guys will pop out of, like, from behind a table or a tree and shoot you, and you have to memorize where they are, and God, it's a bad game. So bad.
See, the thing is that all FMV games like that, I think, are kind of bad, because, yeah. I've played a little bit of the fantastic Day 1 DLC, completely free, for the Gunstringer, which is the Wavy Two-Man Chronicles, which is an FMV game using Kinect. And it's fucking amazing. So, I don't know. Maybe you have to be in the right mindset, because I can tell you this much. It's not like Wavy Two-Man Chronicles is good. It's an FMV game. There's a lot of stuff where it's like you need to memorize where people are popping out of if you don't want to get caught off guard and shot.
Right.
It's just so damn funny. Because it is a very tongue-in-cheek game.
Right. Well, nobody should buy Mad Dog McCree ever.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems so weird. It just seems like they're kind of like, hey, we can put it on 3DS. What the fuck? Let's do it.
I wonder how much it'll cost.
Yeah, I can't imagine it being too much.
If it's more than free, then too much.
Other news is that we're going to get a Mutant Muds demo eventually. Who knows when? It'll have, I believe, 4 levels and a secret level. So that's cool. If you haven't played the game, check out the demo, and you will hopefully undoubtedly go out and buy it, because it's fantastic.
I'm sure everyone that listens to us got it already, since we talk about it almost every single week.
If you haven't, explain to us why in an email to connectivity@nintendorealreport.com. Yes, it is our number 2. It seems like that, you know, people are debating that. The number 1 and the number 2 between Revelations and Mutant Muds. I think both are fantastic games.
They are.
And we should celebrate both of them. Anyway, Rayman Origins on 3DS is delayed until June. It's supposed to come out in about 6 days. So that's kind of weird. I'm getting kind of irritated with this trend of 3DS games supposed to come out in like a week, and they're just like, haha, too bad, delayed for 2 months.
Yeah.
At least this is better than Sega's patented, the game was supposed to come out today, BT dubs, it's not coming out for 2 months.
And then telling you it is out that day, in 3 months,
yeah.
Randomly.
Yep. Sega basically being like, well, it's not out today, but we might have something more. Oh, by the way, GameStop exclusive, it's out on Friday.
I'm really looking forward to Rayman Origins.
Just so you guys know.
I'm looking forward to Rayman Origins 3D. I didn't buy any of the other versions because I was waiting for the 3DS version, and now it seems like that wasn't a smart idea.
Yeah. I mean, probably by the time the 3DS version comes out, you'll be able to get the Wii one for $20.
I think
so.
You already can.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of the thing that sucks about it is that, well, it's not like it's going to go decrease in quality as a game I really hope they add something good to the 3DS version to make it worthwhile. Because by the time it does come out in June, nearly every version of the game will be the same price or cheaper. At a minimum.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm kind of interested in it because I feel like I play more of a platformer like that on my 3DS than I would on my Wii. Although, outside of Skylanders, I would pretty much play anything more on any other system than my Wii. And it took me 5 years, but Nintendo, you have broken me. I'm now one of those people that's just like, yeah, it just gathers dust. Because it did for a while, and then I got back into Skylanders.
Right.
And it'll go back to dust again. But anyway, that's about it for news. There's not really that much going on. we've had, you know, busy stuff in the week and GDC and all that jazz, but right now we're just waiting for Kid Icarus and seeing what the future might hold.
I got my 3DS back.
Yay!
And it came with 10 street passes.
That's pretty wonderful. I know Andy was complaining that he did not get a damn one.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I think mine must have just been sitting in with a whole bunch of other ones, just sitting there. And
well, 10 is also the max, so you might have had the potential for more if only they processed your street passes.
Yeah, that's probably true.
The jerks. Anyway, Zach, you have the first letter.
Okay. This is from Adolf Vega. And he says, I am really enjoying the new fad of bringing retro games to the modern era. Cave Story and Excitebike Tour, World Tour, are fantastic examples of Neo retro gameplay done right. I have two recent examples. Like Cave Story and Excitebike World Tour? Sorry. Mutant Muds and VVVVVVV on the 3DS eShop. V to the Power of 6 on the 3DS has old-school graphics, simple controls, and it's very difficult. The way the game feels modern with its excellent map on the lower screen, having constant checkpoints, infinite lives, and quick save feature keeps the game difficult but enjoyable. Mutant Muds also has old school graphics, simple controls, and it's very difficult. However, this game has many of the old school poor game design. Enemies that attack from off screen, yeah, that is annoying. A terrible map. Is there a map at all?
There is no map.
Yeah, there is no map.
I don't really think the game is lacking because of a map. It's a very linear game.
Yeah. No checkpoints. Upgrades that are not stackable. That I did find that annoying. And finally, gameplay with little to no variety. Don't get me wrong. I do enjoy Mutant Muds, but I think the gameplay is attempting to feel too old school to a fault. My question is, how exactly do you make a game feel old school without feeling obsolete and antiquated in this modern gameplay world?
Well, the simple answer to that is by modernizing it.
Right.
Next question. <no. laughs> But, I mean, it is the kind of thing, like, I see where he's coming from with the VVV, VVV, and the Mutant Muds comparison. Because, you know, the letter V six times has a very old-school feel to it, but it also feels very modern. I mean, the checkpoints are the kind of thing that drives that home. It also, the really easy-to-use map. Especially on 3DS. I really love how the map is on the bottom screen for that game. It makes it a lot smoother. While Mutant Muds does kind of have that more, I guess, slightly archaic feel to it, because it does have, you know, the things that he pointed out, enemies attacking from off-screen, no checkpoints. But I don't really know if that makes Mutant Muds any less of a game than VVVVVV.
Right.
I think that Mutant Muds, I mean, it does things a little differently, but I mean, they're similar games, but they're not at the same time.
What would you say is another good example of a old school new game, new old school game?
I'd have to think about that for a little bit. Does anybody else have anything to say while I think about that?
I'm trying to think of an answer as well.
I'm also trying to think of an answer.
I moved my stack of games away from my desk. I can't look
at Shinobi them. For 3DS was a pretty good example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, that is another one of those games that does it, you know, almost to a fault, because it is brutally hard on its normal difficulty. The levels are very long. There's a live system in place. And that is, I mean, that's the kind of game where it looks a little more modern, but it's a little more complicated and challenging. I mean, in that respect, it is very much like, you know, its old school counterparts, but is that really a good thing? I mean, I like Shinobi, but it is a little frustrating with its difficulty sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know if it... Well, it probably doesn't count. You know, Star Fox 64 3D is a... I don't know how retro we're going here, but...
That is literally a re-release of a game. That doesn't count.
Well, it's kind of a remake. Like, they made it
But they made it exactly the same. I mean, what they did is they redid the graphics, but they made the game exactly as it was before.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Like, it's not like they, like, tweaked the levels. That is the same game that came out on N64 in 1997.
Yeah. Okay, how about...
I thought of one, though, quick.
Sorry. Oh, go ahead.
Yes.
Retro Game Challenge?
Yeah.
I mean, that is another one that probably does it to a fault, where it takes all the good and the bad. Although, I would say that's the point of that game. But, I mean, it does do that kind of thing where it's like, hey, remember these old games? Remember the things that pissed you off about them? Yeah, they're still here.
Oh, I got one. It's not a Nintendo game, but it's Cthulhu Saves the World.
Yeah. I mean, because that harkens back to old school RPGs, right?
Yeah, but it's got a whole all sorts of modern stuff to it.
Or Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden. I was like that. That's a great game if you guys haven't played that before.
Wow.
It's basically it's an RPG that takes place in like the I guess it's somewhat of a sequel to stuff like Michael Jordan Chaos in the Windy City, Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball, and Barkley Shut Up and Jam.
My God.
But you play as like I forget all the exact things. I know you fight Ghost Dad, as in like Bill Cosby in the movie Ghost Dad. You fight the Ghost Dad. There is a robot, Vince Carter. There is a Michael Jackson wears a pimp hat and is the villain. Or, I mean, Michael Jordan wears a pimp hat and is the villain.
Wow. How have I not played this?
It's pretty fantastic. You should go, everyone, not just you two, should go look this up and play it. It's not that long, but it's very, very awesome.
Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. But does anybody else have any other retro games like this?
I got nothing.
I mean, how exactly would you make a game feel old school? Like, that's the one thing that kind of trips me up a little bit. I mean, that's the thing. Or at least making it feel old school without it feeling obsolete.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a tough thing to tread. Because part of the thing that makes games feel old school is having them feel kind of, I mean, in a way, obsolete. Because, like, Mega Man 9 and 10... Like,
oh, those are good examples of new retro games. Hell yeah.
But, I mean, that is the kind of thing where it's like... But that's the thing with Mega Man 9 and 10 is that, like, if you updated those games in more ways than it was, then it wouldn't be Mega Man 9 and 10. Yeah. Like, that's the kind of thing is that sometimes you got to take the good with the bad with some of these retro games, especially the retro revivals. It's like, if... You know, you change how Punch-Out would play on the Wii, then would it even be Punch-Out anymore?
Right.
Like, there might be some things that frustrate people about those games, but then you're ruining the idea of the game.
You make a compelling argument. And actually, it's exactly why I don't like Mega Man 7 and Mega Man 8 as much as, you know, 2 through 6 and 9 and 10. Because they do... change it up. I feel like they change it up too much.
All right, well, let's move on to the next letter, which is from Vicky, and she writes, I just listened to your discussion of Chrono Cross, and I thought it was great. Thanks, Vicky. There was another somewhat controversial game that came out at about the same time, Legend of Mana. It had very mixed reviews, and I seem to recall some strong feelings, much like the Chrono Trigger Chrono Cross situation. I haven't been listening for long, so I don't know if you've touched on this already, but it would be interesting to hear your thoughts. Now, when we received this email, I had not really heard of anything about this kind of Legend of Mana debate, but apparently it was the kind of thing where it was a follow-up to the series, and it just changed a lot of things about the game, and people kind of revolted a little bit about it. But it was the Mana series, which is smaller potatoes compared to Chrono Trigger. Have you guys ever played a Mana game?
I played... It was Secret of Mana, right, on the SNES?
Yeah.
I played that for a little bit.
Yeah, I played the SNES one for a little while. I remember not loving it.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan. I played one of the DS Mana games. I don't remember which one.
I think I played Sword of Mana or something. Maybe a GBA one, I think.
But I really just remember Secret of Evermore being awesome.
I remember not liking either of those games. I just don't like that style of RPG that much.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true for me, too. If it's not called Pokemon or Dragon Quest, I generally don't care.
Yeah. I kind of agree to an extent.
Yeah. All right, so Patrick, it has to be a certain Dragon Quest game, like 1, 8, and 9.
You should really play those other DS games. They're very good.
I want to get 4, 5, and 6. 6 looks good.
Yeah, I got 6 on clearance at Target for like $15.
Whoa.
I have not opened it yet. I got it back during Christmas time. Just, it was one of those things. I got a Kamiden for $8.
And oh, damn.
DQ6 for 15, and I opened Okamiden and played some of that, but I haven't gotten to DQ6 yet.
It's still sitting next to Metal Gear Solid on your shelf.
There you go. At least I opened Metal Gear Solid at this point.
There you go. Well, speaking of Target, I just got Spirit Tracks for $20.
Ooh.
Did I pay too much?
I think that's about right.
Okay.
All right, Patrick, you got the last letter that we'll do for this show, because we need to wrap it up.
All right. Wilson writes, given the recent news that Assassin's Creed 3 is coming to Wii U, it got me thinking. What do third-party games on the system have to add to make you want to buy them on the Wii U as opposed to your Xbox or PS3? Whether it's improved graphical fidelity, exclusive DLC, or touchscreen features, I'm curious to hear your opinions.
I want to be able to equip my iron boots on the touchscreen controller so that I don't have to go into the menu.
I know you're just trying to be a jackass, but that is something that, like, that inventory management would be something that would be very nice.
I'm being a jackass, but I'm also being serious. Yeah. I mean, really, when you think about it, this is kind of turning the system into a big DS.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Yeah. I really like the DS.
Yeah, I do too. I was playing it today.
You put a map on that screen? I would be so happy. If you just put a map on that screen, on the controller, that would be great. In all honesty, at least for that first round of games, I mean, I hope they use it in some more interesting ways, and I think there's some of the shit that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah.
But at a minimum, like, you just put a map there, and that would, in all honesty, everything else being equal, that would be enough for Assassin's Creed 3 being like, well, maybe I'll get the Wii U version instead of 360.
Mm-hmm. When they release Batman Arkham City, it would be nice if the map of Arkham were displayed on the touchscreen so you could just tap where you want Batman to, you know, head towards.
Yeah.
That would be great, because I've spent a lot of time going back to that map in the menu.
I mean, I was just playing Darksiders on Xbox 360, and I did the same thing where I'm pausing the game and looking at the map, figuring out where I'm going next. They do have a little mini map, but I mean, it is nice to have that bigger map displayed. And I assume that developers will come up with something more interesting than what we're talking about for using it. Sure. But yeah, that's pretty.
How do you like Darksiders?
It's cool. I really like the environment, but they need to stop making me fight things.
Oh, there is a lot of that.
There is so many kill rooms in the first hour. It's absurd.
Right.
But,
and they're literally kill rooms. Like, you go into a portal that says, kill all these dudes.
Yeah, I just went through the first round of that, and I'm just like, are you serious? And people complained about the fucking Silent Realm? And people are okay with this for some reason? I don't get it. Yeah. But
the dungeons are better. The dungeons are fun.
Yeah, but that's news. Speaking of Darksiders, by the time you hear this, I will be getting close to going on a plane to going to San Francisco to check out Darksiders 2.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Wii U version will not be playable, but I will be interviewing people about the Wii U version. So if you have any questions about the Wii U version, either hit me up on Twitter at Enron10 or email connectivity@nintendoreport.com, and I'll do my best to try to, you know, get an answer to your question if I can.
I want to live with their art director.
But Jomad?
Yeah.
Cool.
I love his art designs. Holy crap. He gets some shit for it, and I don't know why, because his art direction is phenomenal.
All right, well, That is the news. Email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and we'll talk to you guys real soon.
Yep.
Bye.
See ya.
Folks, welcome to another exciting segment of Connectivity. I'm Zachary Miller, here with Alex Kalafi.
Hey!
Hey! And Danny Bivens.
Hi there.
We're going to talk about Assassin's Creed, because Assassin's Creed 3 was just recently revealed to be a Wii U title. But I figure people who just have Nintendo systems might not be familiar with the Assassin's Creed games, except maybe the DS one, which is shitty. So we're going to talk about the series a little bit, at least the first two numbered ones, because none of us have played the kind of Assassin's Creed 2 Part 2 and Assassin's Creed 2 Part 3.
Boom, we suck.
Yeah, we do. Those games came out like 6 months apart. I mean, you know. That's more than annualization. So let's talk about Assassin's Creed 1 first. What have y'all played of Assassin's Creed 1?
So, you know, I got Assassin's Creed, the first one, a couple of months after it first came out. And I remember hearing a lot of people kind of dog it a little bit, saying like, oh man, this isn't really that great, or, you know, stuff like that. But so that kind of made me go in with expectations actually pretty low. And that was actually a good thing, because I really, really enjoyed the game. And I think what that game did, too, at the time, you think 2007, that's still pretty early on in, like, you know, the 360 PS3 life cycle.
It is.
Really, I can't really think of too many games before that that had such a wide open world where you can go and basically anywhere that you see. It's like, yeah, you know, there are different segments of the game, like different cities, but once that particular city is loaded up, you're like at the top of a mountain and you look down on, let's say, you know, this is taking place, you know, during like the Crusades,
right,
and, you know, like around like, you know, Israel, whatever, all that stuff. But, you know, you're looking down from this mountain down on Jerusalem, and you can go anywhere in there, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And it's something that really kind of essentially kind of started this generation to kind of show what kind of stuff is possible on that hardware.
Yeah. And, you know, people give the game, I really liked it too. I played it pretty late after it had become a cheap game.
Okay.
But man, I really liked it. And yeah, it was repetitious, but you don't have to do everything.
Sure.
Like you don't have to do every possible mission to further the story. So I was fine with it.
Sure.
I only did the missions that I didn't not hate. So, but you know, it was really awesome to just, like you say, run all over the place and, and run up towers. And let me tell you, the first time I dove off something and the camera pans back, you're like, damn.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, one thing, too, the combat, I think it's really well done, too. Basically, you know, you have a bunch of different weapons at your disposal. You have, like, a big sword. You could have, like, small, like, knives. And right. Then you have your little assassin thing that just basically kind of just comes out of where your finger is or something, basically. Right. That's kind of crazy. But so, I mean, this gives you a lot of different options for killing people. And it's really satisfying, too, when you're going around, you know, sneaking up behind somebody, stabbing them in the neck with your little doodad. And, you know, that's great.
Yeah, it is. That is one of the things I really like about the game, is like stalking people and then just, oh, they turn corner down like a empty alley and you shank them in the, you know, kidney. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of walk off and blend into the crowd. That's really fun.
Yeah. And then people are around, they're like, oh my God, stuff like
who
that.
Who did this?
Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous and awesome.
Yeah. And the story is pretty good. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's the first one. I don't care if we give stuff away. You are Altair, who's, I don't think he's the first assassin, but he's lauded in later games. And he is on a mission to kill 12 enemies of the Assassin's Order, I think. Mm-hmm. And they're all Templars.
Right.
And so
which they find out at a later time in the game.
Right. That's true. And so he does that, and he gets back to his boss, and he's like, hey, I killed all these 12 guys. Awesome, right? And his boss turns out to be a Templar who has been I forget how he gets a hold of that treasure. Mm-hmm. Does he just have it the whole time?
I don't think so. I think he needed to find it or something. I mean, it's been like 4 years since I played the first game, so you know, some of the details are kind of escaping me at the moment. But and he ends up kind of being an asshole.
He does. But Altair eventually defeats him and finds this treasure that shows the location of other treasures like it in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the game ends.
Yeah.
And the whole time, by the way, the whole premise of this series is that you're actually playing as a guy named Desmond, who's mm-hmm. voiced by Nolan North, who voices everything. And he has been kidnapped by modern day Templars and is being held captive in a kind of a tube where he can relive his ancestors' memories.
Yes.
So the Templars are hoping to find the location of these treasures by kind of peering into the past through Desmond,
mm-hmm.
which may be the most convoluted way to find anything ever. But it's cool. And Kristen Bell is in it too.
Is he?
She's the girl who helps you out.
Oh, I thought you said Christian Bale, like Batman. And I was like, what?
That would have been awesome.
He's like, I'm Batman. You're like, okay.
that's where the first game kind of ends. And then there's a PSP game which kind of furthers Altair's story. It's kind of the story of how he meets his wife, which is... Okay. kind of leads directly to Assassin's Creed 2,
mm-hmm.
which as good as Assassin's Creed 1 was, Assassin's Creed 2 is about 100 times better.
Definitely. They do a lot more in the game that just kind of expands on what was already good about the first one, but then just kind of add other things that just make it even better. One major addition to the second game is currency and the ability to go out and buy and upgrade your weapons. And not just that, I mean, you could buy tons of crap. You can buy like art. You have like a little villa a little bit later on in the game,
right.
that you can upgrade. And I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff like that that you can do. You totally don't have to, but it's there for the people that want to do it. And I think that's great.
Yeah. That's the collectathon aspect of the game.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And actually,
and I loved it. I got everything.
Oh, yeah. Actually, me too. This is one of the few games on my Xbox that I got all of the achievement points. I did everything that I could possibly do.
Nice.
Even find all these little annoying flags that are, or feathers they are, in this
game. Oh, that's where I stopped. I was like, oh my god, I can't do this. I'll be playing this till the end of time.
Well, I mean, I use like a guide.
Oh, okay.
My god, are you serious?
I'd have to as well.
Yeah, and in the first game too, they have all these little flags that are kind of littered throughout the game world, and I didn't take the time to get all of those, but it's, I don't know, that was, like, ridiculous. I think there were, like, 200 or so of them in total, and that's, I mean, 100 or however many feathers there are, that's a lot of freaking feathers to go find, and I don't know why I did it, but I did it.
Yes. The thing I really like about the second game is that, well, first off, I should say that one of the big additions is, in the first game, if Altair touched water, he drowned immediately. In the second one, he figured out it's Ezio. Ezio figured out how to swim, his descendant.
Right.
So that was nice. It was also nice that the towns looked the cities looked very different from one another.
Oh yeah,
that wasn't so apparent in the first game.
Right, right, and it's worth mentioning too that this is taking place in a totally different location. It's taking place in like Renaissance, like Italy.
Yeah.
One of the cities you go to is like Florence. You know, at one point you go to Rome. It's very briefly. But then, you know, there's like a lot of little areas around it. It's just really cool. Like you said, there's a lot of variety with the landscapes and stuff, as opposed to with the other one where they're all kind of similar.
Just yeah, similar like, architecture.
Yeah, color palettes are maybe changed a bit or something, you know. But, I mean, yeah, that's fine. And it...
And the second one really expands on the scope of getting really high.
Oh, yeah.
That's some of those buildings you climb up. Sometimes it's kind of hard to get up on them. You have to figure out how you're supposed to get all the way up. But once you do, it's really awesome. And you can see for, you know, the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. And then, of course, there, like you say, lots of additions to the weapons, upgrading weapons, and you have a lot more options in combat now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it's still really fun to just stab a dude in the kidney and walk off.
Oh, yeah, for sure. one thing, too, like in the first game, like you really don't – you can go around and just kill people, and as long as there's no guards around, no one's going to do anything.
That's true.
I remember like I was outside – like some, you know, really huge church or something. I just kept stabbing people, and there were just bodies all over the place. And I was like, I just wanted to see, like, how many I could do before they started disappearing or whatever.
Right.
And just, you know, just kept on going. But in the second game, if you do that, you get – there's, like, a little gauge kind of at the top of the screen that's kind of showing, like, your wanted level. You start doing, like, crazy stuff, people are going to notice.
Right.
And then, you know, somehow this news gets out to the authorities, and then your ass is going to be wanted.
And then don't you have to start tearing down wanted posters of yourself? Yeah, that's fun.
You can tear down wanted posters. You can pay off officials. You could, you know, or just kill everyone. Just keep doing it, whatever.
I remember that, yeah. That was fun. Mm-hmm. Did you play the DLC? Well, you must have if you got all the achievements.
Okay, no, actually, you don't need to have the DLC to get all the achievements.
Oh, okay.
At least for, like, the base game. I did get, like, episode 12. It's, like, Fiorelli or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But I haven't completed it yet. Actually, I was just going to play this today just for the segment, and then I realized that somehow that was deleted off of my Xbox, so I had to go and re-download it. You know,
I thought the DLC – I got both DLC levels because I'm a whore. and they cancel each other out. Like in one of them they take place in the middle of the game, which is stupid.
Yeah.
Cause if you actually in the main game, when you're going through it, it'll be like, oh, memory's hazy here.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of a cheap way to get some DLC out of it. Cause I mean, it's kind of just like a big gap. Like,
right.
Like two chapters or something are just gone. And then all of a sudden you're basically at the end of the game and you're like,
it's like wait. 1 year later. Huh?
Yeah, it's like, what? And obviously something has happened, you know, between that, but you just don't know when you're playing through the main part of the game.
Yeah.
It's kind of annoying. But
it is. But those two chapters just cancel each other out. Cause in this game, Ezio, also gets one of these treasures. They're called Apples of Eden. Mm-hmm. He gets one. And then in the first DLC, somebody steals it from him. In the second DLC, he gets it back. So there's no consequence at all to the overall story. So I was a little disappointed there.
Well, I've heard of it.
Alex, you've been quiet. What's your experience with this series?
If any of you couldn't tell, I don't have the most experience. The series. Which is kind of an understatement. All of it. I didn't touch the first one because I've heard about the mixed reception. The second one, I borrowed from a friend, which I played about 2 hours of, and the I guess I can say what turned me off from it. The things I didn't like were, since I had no familiarity with the combat, and I was thrown into the world, I was thrown into a story I didn't understand at all, and didn't really want to backtrack and like go to Wikipedia or something. The combat, which I was talking to Dan about this, was kind of like God of War, but had a little more complex. It was a little more complex. That part I kind of liked.
More timing based.
Right. But the big thing I didn't like, and you can correct me, call me wrong if this is wrong, but...
You're wrong!
Okay. But the one issue I had was that the world, even if there was a lot of places to climb on and explore, it had the same issue that I have with a lot of open world games, where, okay, there's a lot of places to go, but there's not really that much cool stuff to find.
Yeah.
But
you must have loved Jack 2.
Oh, I never had a PS2.
Oh. You're missing out on one of the worst open world games ever made.
Oh. A shame.
Yeah, it is.
But I mean...
Well...
Oh, well, I was just going to say that I know I'm unqualified to say that I didn't find anything cool after playing after 2 hours. But that was definitely the impression I got, and it seems like I'm not totally wrong on that.
Now, did you just jump in, like, at a random spot in the game, or did you start the game?
Well, I mean, it wasn't like a cartridge. Like, it already had a save file. It was...
Okay, so you were jumping in after the beginning of the game.
Well, yeah, as soon as the game started, I guess.
Okay, so you were basically, the first 2 hours, you were probably still in the tutorial phase.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Because the game, that was something I was going to say. Assassin's Creed 1 kind of throws you in there, but Assassin's Creed 2, and this has kind of annoyed me about it, it's got like a 3 or 4 hour tutorial. Like, before Ezio finds a reason to become an assassin, climbing up a tower and seeing something, it's all tutorial. And it moves pretty slowly. But once you get past that point and the whole world opens up for you, it's really a lot more engaging. But it is kind of a steep learning curve time period, I guess. But I will say, despite that long period of startup, I appreciated that there's so much story in Assassin's Creed 2. Because the first one didn't have a whole lot of story. It was like, all right, you're this Altair guy. You work for this Assassin's Order. You go around killing people. And Assassin's Creed 2, I mean, it really makes a character out of Ezio. And gives him motivation. And he's a really interesting character. And he's so interesting that they made 2 more games starring him. which I haven't played. But that was something that was missing in 1 that I really liked about 2. There wasn't a minute where I wasn't engaged in the story.
Right. And I totally agree with you. It's just a lot more fleshed out. There's just a lot more going on. You actually care a little bit more about him too, Ezio, as opposed to like Altair. I think that might be because of the bad voice acting. That Altair. I mean, it just, I don't know. It was so weird with that, just to go on a little bit of a tangent, like in Assassin's Creed 1, Altair seemed to be like the only guy, so when he's talking, he didn't have like a British accent or something, or some kind of an accent that wasn't like American. So it's just so weird that, why does he talk like
nobody like
he's
else?
From, like he's from New York or something, or whatever, you know? And then
like
everyone
Tom
else
Cruise
is,
in that Valkyrie movie.
Oh, a piece of
surrounded
crap.
By Germans.
So it's kind of off-putting, but I mean, this one, with the second one, I think it's just a lot better. And I think you know, they learned a lot more, a lot from the first game and just kind of, you know, made improvements that just made an overall better game.
And in fact, I think in the, when the game starts, everyone's speaking Italian.
Yeah.
And then it eventually transitions into English.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Hunt for Red October.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, that's awesome. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. So I won't tell you what happens at the end of the second game. You can read it in Wikipedia, but the mystery of the Assassins versus the Templars and Desmond's involvement in all this really gets a whole lot deeper. And it's a really cool ending.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Makes me kind of want to play the next two games just because I don't know if that part is filled in a little more.
Right.
But let's talk about the third one because it looks amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And just a little thing here, too. I don't know about you guys, but actually in college, my major was American history.
Ooh.
So when I heard that they're making, you know, an Assassin's Creed game based on, you know, colonial America, revolutionary America, my history boner just went right up. I mean, man. And, you know, I think I heard somebody talking on one of the other podcasts that, you know, there really are no Revolutionary War-based games. But, you know what? I have played one. There is a mod for Counter-Strike on the computer, a Revolutionary War mod that came out, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. And I used to play it online. It was great.
Nice.
You know, you got the muzzle-loading guns. You have bayonets at the end of your stuff. And you could even do, like, the commands and if your teammates are working together, you could, like, you know, do like, hey, ready, aim, fire, do that. So it's kind of cool.
Tap B to load your musket.
Yes. So, anyways, sorry, I had to go off on that little bit of a tangent there.
Oh, no, but that's cool. I didn't know there were any games about the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, other than that, I don't think there are any, like, any that are like shooters or any like actiony type of things like that. So,
well, the third game is going to take place in the American Revolution. I think the year is 1777.
Yeah, they did. That's what they put in the trailer. But I mean, as is the case with Assassin's Creed 2, it takes place over like a number of years.
That's true.
So I don't think they really talked too much into detail about the exact years this is going to be taking place.
Yeah.
But it's going to be taking place around the Revolution.
Yeah.
So.
And you're the assassin this time is a guy named. Oh my gosh, it just blanked out.
Can I pronounce it?
Connor.
Can I pronounce?
Go ahead.
Oh.
Well, can I pronounce the big name?
Yes.
Because I'm on the Assassin's Creed wiki, and it has that little parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
Ra-Dun Hage-Dun.
Excellent.
Of course.
He's half Native American and half, well, American.
British.
Yeah, I guess they weren't American yet. They were, it's the Revolutionary War. They're all British.
Right.
Says that in his biography, an English father and a Native American mother. So
I'm thinking the prequel to this game is Pocahontas.
I think so. Sounds about right.
Yes. But this is really interesting. I wonder. I mean, the combat looks like it's going to be a lot different, or at least, I don't know, modified.
Yeah, from what I've been reading about this, this seems to be basically putting you in like a more aggressive kind of a combat as opposed to the first and second games. I'm assuming the other two after that Jack and I haven't played. it's really a defensive kind of game. You're basically holding the block button the whole time, and then you wait for their attack. You see it coming, and then you can basically you know, do something counter
do a
on
counter,
them.
Yeah.
Do some kind of a cool kill animation or something. It's pretty cool. But this one, like I said, you could see from the trailer, and like I said, you can read too online. It's focused more on you just kind of being aggressive and just getting out there and just tearing some people up.
Dude's got a hatchet.
Yeah.
And rather than jumping off incredibly tall buildings, which did not exist during the American Revolution, it looks like you'll be running through forests, running through trees, which it kind of brought to mind the indoor speed bike scene, maybe a little bit.
Nice.
So that should be cool. But I'm really looking forward to how how the Assassin's Creed formula is going to work in a much it's a very different environment.
Right.
Even the cities are going to be, you know, there are no tall buildings. It's there aren't these big bustling cities. It's kind of colonies.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah. Alex,
Well, what were you saying, Zach?
No. I was giving the floor to you guys.
Yes.
Okay. So, a couple of things I want to say. Commenting on what Dan said about the American Revolution, there not being games, I will say that this is the reason why I'm excited, and also probably the reason why I'm here. Because one of my dream games has always been a real dynamic shooter based on the American Revolution, to the extent of something like Mass Effect, but not in colonial America. As in, choices matter, and in fact, like, a weird gaming fantasy of mine is to have a choice halfway through the game where the British give you a good offer to join their side, and depending on what you choose, the second half of the game is completely different.
That'd be cool.
But talking about the actual game, it said one of the locations is in Boston, which I was excited about because I'm in Massachusetts. But it said one of the locations. And colonial America, there are a lot of states. So because I never played the games, how will they work multiple locations into that, since I thought it was like one hub city that it just spread off into a few different locations?
Well, no, the other games, what it would be is you'd, you know, let's say you're done with Florence. You take your horse and you ride for about 15 minutes towards, I don't know, Rome. And on the way, there's really not a whole lot to do, but it is very pretty. So I assume it'll be like that, except more so, because if we're talking the American colonies, they're not going to be huge cities like Florence and Rome.
Right. I mean, you know, the big ones, you know, Boston,
sure.
New York. I mean, those are going to be – those are relatively large around that time. But, I mean, it, like you said, it's not going to be anything like what you've seen in the previous games, because they're just that not that kind of architecture, at least to that extent, in colonial America. It's just not there.
Right. So I assume there will be more in-between city traversal.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll put some stuff in there.
Right. Yeah. Because, some, like you said, sometimes in the other two games, when you're going between stuff, between two cities or two locations, sometimes there's just not a lot there, not a lot to do. I'm particularly thinking about the first game.
Where
sometimes you just come across enemies and then, like, a tower or something, and you're like, okay, this is lame.
But, and then you climb the tower so that you can see other towers to climb.
Yes. So maybe we'll climb big trees so we can see other trees to climb.
There you go.
Climb. Question mark.
And there'll be bald eagles instead of hawks and falcons that show you where you can take off.
Hell yeah, go America!
Being made by a French company, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. You know, like I said too, with me being a history major, I'm, you know, focusing on colonial America, I'm kind of curious to, like, see what kind of people they're going to be using, you know, what people from history they're going to be using in the game. If it's just going to be people that, like, everyone knows, or if it's going to maybe even be some, like, more obscure type of people. So I think that's interesting. And another thing that I hope that they do, too, because during the time, you know, of the American Revolution, it was a really kind of divided time in America. It wasn't, like, everyone wasn't, oh, my God, go America, we're going to be free. Not everyone was like that. It's just not the way it was. I mean, it was probably about 50-50. So people were like, what the hell, you guys are crazy, we're British subjects. You know, the guy's like, oh my God, I want to be free, you know. So
what, do you want to be Canadians?
Yes. So I hope they kind of, you know, touch on this with the game and not just focus on, oh, I want to only kill British people because they're evil, you know. So we'll see where they go.
Is it
wrong? You know,
well, I was just going to say, is it wrong to actually kind of want to kill a lot of redcoats and British people? Because that's like,
well, as long...
I know I'm going to sound offensive for saying this, but I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I don't have anything against the British. But the entire idea of taking down redcoats with tomahawks is kind of the big lore.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Patriot, but you're controlling it. But you're not Mel Gibson.
No, and that's a plus.
yes.
Yeah, maybe this game will start out with Connor's son, played by the late Heath Ledger, dying at the hands of a British meanie.
Maybe.
and then at the end of the game, Connor will stab the main bad guy through the heart with the American flag.
Oh, man.
And fireworks will go off.
A perfect ending to the game.
Yes. I actually, Danny, your comment about historical figures made me think, you know, the first game, I hadn't realized this, but the people you kill are actual people.
Yeah, because I'm not so familiar with that area of history, but I remember doing my research on Wikipedia and finding, yes, you know, these names. And it's like, oh, this guy's actually real. You know, it's kind of interesting.
That was cool. And the second game has real people, too.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, the second game's got Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's some Leonardo da Vinci, like the role he plays is kind of like an inventor. He gives you like weapons and a bunch of other cool crap.
He's Q.
Yeah. And I think there's been some talk that maybe Benjamin Franklin would be the guy.
Oh, that'd be awesome. This game.
It'd be kind of interesting to see how they would work that out. But, yeah, we'll see how this goes. I think it's going to be a really cool game. I'm probably getting it on day one. Obviously, there's going to be a Wii U version, but, you know, for me, being in Japan, I really don't know if the game is going to be coming to the Wii U, like, at the launch or around the same time. You know, the Assassin's Creed games are out here. Usually, there's a bit of a delay with, like, Western games sometimes coming out here. It just depends. So, and honestly, I'd love to play this game in English.
Now, this game, did it come out in November?
October.
October
30th. Right.
Okay. So it could theoretically be a Wii U launch title.
Right.
If we assume the Wii U is coming out on Black Friday.
Right.
Or the Sunday before Black Friday.
Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind that this is going to be a launch title for the Wii U.
Nice. Ubisoft does have to put something on the console.
Exactly. So
this would be a good way to go. And this is a game that I would, I'd chomp right up when I'm in my line for my Wii U. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else is going to be there launch day. I assume like Batman and Darksiders. Mm-hmm. But man, if there's a game that I'd get on Wii U with my launch unit, it would probably be this.
Right.
What do you think the touchscreen is going to be for?
You know, honestly, Alex, did you have any ideas about this man that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I'm going to be honest. Like, I'd like to have something exciting to say on the matter, but I don't, because I don't think Ubisoft's going to do anything interesting on the matter. Because I feel like it's going to be kind of like a DS, where they're going to shoehorn a lot of stuff into it. They're going to try to get sort of a map, and maybe you can select weapons or something. But I wouldn't hopes up for something original to actually happen.
Persistent kill count. That'd be cool. They will probably, we haven't talked about this aspect of the games, but I assume the touchscreen will have a lot to do with the multiplayer.
Could, yeah.
Because not in Assassin's Creed 1 or 2, but in games none of us have played, Brotherhood and whatever the hell the other one's called.
Revelations.
Yeah, Revelations. There's a really cool multiplayer mode where you have a target in one of these big cities, and you have to go kill them, but the target is controlled by a player too, and they have to evade you. So the target is not marked, but you can kind of tell how they move, what they're doing, whether or not they're a target or not. So, and they don't know that you're an assassin. So it's really kind of a cool cat and mouse kind of game.
Hmm.
So, you know, I can see a lot of options for the touchscreen there.
Yeah, I think what they'll do, they'll probably take a lot of the stuff off of the main screen, like, like maybe a map, health, you know, simple stuff like that.
Yeah, the mini-map, the health, the wanted
right
meter.
I mean, if you think about what Nintendo did with Ocarina of Time on the 3DS, I mean, basically they took everything that was on the screen in the original game and they moved it down to the touchscreen, which, yeah. You know, it kind of frees up a lot of real estate on the screen, so you see, you know, you could see a lot more of the world and what's going on. So that's kind of neat, but
yeah,
I don't know. Kind of like what Alex was saying, I don't know if I have a whole lot of confidence in them just with this being like a multi-platform game too. I don't know if I have a lot of confidence with Ubisoft doing something mind-blowing, you know, with the touchscreen. And you know what? That's okay. Right. I'm fine with that though. So
as long as it plays as well and looks as good as the other ones, that's all I care about.
Indeed.
So yeah, Assassin's Creed 3 coming out in October. You can probably buy it when you buy a Wii U if you wait a month. I'm friggin' excited about it.
Oh yeah, me too.
I think it's going to be the most interesting Assassin's Creed game.
I think so too.
You guys have anything else?
This email.
Yeah, read it away.
All right. Hey, Connectivity Crew. With the recent announcement of Assassin's Creed 3 coming to Wii U, I was wondering what your guys' experience with the series is. I've never played an Assassin's Creed title, despite having recently purchased a PS3 and the old games being available relatively cheaply. However, I would certainly like to get into the series, and dependent on the launch lineup, may end up getting the game for Wii U, assuming it'll be available at launch. Will any of you be picking up the third game? And if so, are you planning on getting the 360 PS3 version or the Wii U one? As a final note, which Assassin's Creed game would you recommend to someone who has never played the series before? I would love to get a taste of the series before diving straight into Assassin's Creed 3. Love the show. Keep up the great work. NBZ.
I'd say get play the second one.
That's what I would say too. I mean, the first one has some really cool locations and stuff, but I think the second one is just a overall better game, better experience, just more stuff to do, especially after you play for more than 2 hours, Alex.
and it also, I think it, you know, Assassin's Creed 1 has that ending sequence that kind of shows you more about the overall mythos of the series, but the second one really dives into a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll get a lot more explanation for what's going on in the second game.
Yeah, and with the second game too, you don't need to have played the first game.
That's true, because they kind of go over it.
Exactly. Sometimes there are little flashbacks and stuff, or, you know, it's just not necessary, because they kind of tell you everything that you really need to know. So.
Yeah, play the second one. It's amazing. And the Xbox 360 and PS3 versions are probably exactly the same.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm probably going to be getting this on the 360. I really want to get an American Wii U, but I'm going to have, because I want to transfer my virtual console games because I have like 50 or 60.
We're assuming that's going to be an option.
Assuming that's an option, which I am. So I think, you know, I'll probably just wait to hear what people say before I pick it up for the Wii U. But picking us up day one, regardless, for the 360, for sure, importing from America to Japan. So.
Well, nice. I did read something that, I don't know if it was from a developer or director or something, and it's something that a lot of people say, but they did say that they made this one, the third one, with new players in mind.
Okay.
Now, they said that for Mass Effect 3 also, and that didn't end up panning out. Well, EA.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work, because you have to have played the first two games to understand what the hell is going on.
But I will say that I do believe whoever said this, because it's a totally different scenario, and they're probably going to tie in some of the Desmond stuff, because they have to. But I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of this is done kind of from scratch.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I imagine you're right, especially with the completely different environment they're going to have to work with.
Right.
So, do you guys think this will be the last core Assassin's Creed game, or do you think we'll see a 4 someday?
I think they'll keep going. I think they'll keep going until they just can't make any more money off of it. Maybe drive it into the ground. You know. At the moment, I'm fine with it. I hope they keep going, even after this. I'd like to see, you know, where they go. I'd love to see an Assassin's Creed take place in Japan or something. I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
But, you know, we'll just see where it goes from here.
Indeed. All right, gents, thanks for joining me.
Right on.
Of course.
I hope I hope you listeners liked us rambling about Assassin's Creed, and maybe we've inspired you to go give it a shot.
Yes, it's cheap now. You can get like the second one for probably $20, so maybe less.
Oh, I've seen it cheaper.
There you go.
There you go. All right, guys.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Never play the game, and I delete it.
I load everything no. at least once. I load yeah, everything like at I least just... once.
Yeah, I load it. Come on.
Yeah.
You guys hear about this Pokemon Yellow game horrible. That got in there?
There was another one. It was supposed to
and
be.
And like, it crash upon loading. It would crash immediately.
There is another one called like Pokemon Black, like Gallery Mode or something, and I'm pretty sure it's just screenshots.
That's excellent. Oh, so here we are on another episode of Connectivity, and I've brought back some fellow old-timers from NWR Connectivity or a newscast past to discuss the concept of the backlog. So with me I've got former staff writer Grant Buell. What's up, Grant?
That is me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And of course, my fellow co-host, Mr. Nathan Mustafa.
Hey, I killed newscast, and now I'm back. You're going job. Down, Connectivity.
Are you back to kill?
It's important to kill any podcast that you appear on.
Yep.
I'll revive it.
So anyway, like, the whole idea here is that I was on Twitter a couple days ago bitching and moaning about not having money, and I decided I was going to set a hard and fast rule that I was not going to buy any games until I was either far, far less broke or until I had played the ones that I already have. And I made a backlog list. Actually, I tweaked a backlog list that I already had. But then Grant and Nathan were kind enough to chime in and agree to play along. I think – I'm not sure about you, Nathan, but Grant, you were already kind of doing this without
well,
any prompting, right?
I said I was going to do it. I said that months ago, and then I kept buying games. So you know how that goes.
I said the same thing, and then – I think last week I bought two PSP games that I haven't touched.
Yep.
You're never going to play those games, just so you know.
I will.
You're never going to play those games.
Once I beat all those other games.
Yeah.
See, if it's a PSP all game, then one of them probably had to be Hot Shots Golf, right?
Oh, no, not a Vita game.
All right.
I'm talking PSP.
I guess I just kind of assumed one third of all PSP games and Vita games were Hot Shots Golf. I don't know. Or Wipeout.
I didn't even own a copy.
Oh, man. Yeah. Nice.
Maybe I need to buy that.
I own Let's Golf on my 3DS, which is the exact same thing, I think.
Except it's Game Loft.
Which means it's a like shallow clone, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, why don't we just go over and talk about what's in our backlog. Let's start with you, Nathan.
Well, I'd like to point out that the second we all sort of joined in this pact, we immediately downloaded the newest DLC pack for Hero Academy.
Well, that was
of course.
That's not like a, that's not an option, really. I mean,
it doesn't count, right?
Well, no. I used a gift card for what it's worth. I didn't spend a cent.
Right.
I mean, you can't be going up against
that's an opportunity cost, Andy.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I had a gift card on my iTunes thing as well, but you can't be going against dwarves and you don't have the option to do the same. I mean, you gotta stay ahead of the game.
So
if
just
it's like the Dark Elves, the game will be balanced in favor of them very quickly. So
How easily are we going to crack? Is this, you know, I already, my fiance pointed out to me, she's like, well, is it breaking it if I buy you a game?
No, I don't think so.
I've got a game pre-ordered for April that, I mean, that's, I guess it's already in the bank, so that's doesn't count either when I get that game. That I got Xenoblade pre-ordered because I am pumped up. And then, they just announced The Last Story's coming out, and that looks really good too. But I gotta keep myself down, you know. Maybe later.
I may end up picking up NCAA football this summer, but I'm going to have to do some hard and fast like justification of spending the money because I'm doing this because I simply can't afford video games at the moment.
Right.
So it's not a matter of cheating because I literally. I would buy, if I was going to cheat anything, I'd probably buy food before I'd buy a video game. Delicious food rather than the cheap ass food I'll be eating for the next little while.
Cup of noodles.
However, if Sony decides to put out The Last Guardian in the next month or two, we'll talk.
Yeah.
I'll break the bank for that.
Does it count if we all buy games for each other?
Ooh.
I promise not to buy you guys any video games.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not buying you any video games. Take that.
Let's make a pact. Same thing. I'm not going to buy you guys any video games.
I'm not going to buy any games and send them to an offshore account that you happen to know the number for or anything like that.
I'm not
going to give me anything on the Wii Virtual Console because
there's nothing to give.
Nothing.
True that.
So Nathan, I was thinking about this in the other day while I was driving actually, and I was trying to decide why it is exactly that I buy so many video games that I never play. And I'm not even talking about never finish. I'm talking about I buy video games that I literally play for 5 minutes. I put it in to see, make sure it works, and then I put it back on the shelf and say, I'll play through that later. Yeah. And I think it has like something to do with the fact that when I was a kid and I had my NES, I got very few games on a regular basis. Like, you know, I got like maybe one or two for Christmas, and if I was lucky, maybe a few more throughout the course of the rest of the year, and I rented them occasionally. But getting a new game when I was growing up was such a momentous occasion that I think it just sort of ingrained in me the idea that I need to get new games as often as possible now that I can afford to do it myself.
Right.
Does that make any sense? Like, I think I'm a lot more hooked on new games than I am on actually playing video games. I just like the experience of
having a new
trying
game.
Something out that for the first time. Yeah.
Well, so much of our entertainment revolves around the discussion of new games. So, you know, like I listen to a lot of podcasts and it's like, I feel like I can't fully enjoy this unless I've got like that game that they're talking about, you know, like everyone's talking about, I don't know, Skyrim.
Yeah.
I was going to get that anyways, but I would be kind of lost for like 2 months of podcasts if I didn't have that.
Oh, I didn't have that, and I was.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that's kind of the good thing about. That's kind of the good thing about the retroactive deal that RFN does, because like a couple of times they cover games that I happen to own and hadn't played, and so it gave me an excuse to go like play a game I already owned for once, like the Fire Emblem game just recently I had, and so I was like, okay, I'm going to play that now. So. It's nice.
Yeah, same here.
I didn't have to like go get a new game because they were only talking about new games.
So, what are you guys playing right now? I guess which would be the first game on your backlog?
For me, it's Tactics Ogre. Let Us Cling Together. That is at the top of my PSP pile.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I've got Resident Evil Revelations going. I don't think it really counts because I'm kind of getting through that on a decent pace and I'm getting close to finishing, so it's not like been sitting there. But like on my I have the OnLive console. I don't know if you know about that, Nathan, but it's that little streaming game console that you hook up, and I've got a bunch of games on there that are really cool. And I got stuck on for whatever reason, and I haven't touched. And so, like, I've got Deus Ex Human Revolution going, and I loved it, but I haven't touched it for weeks, just for no good reason. And then I've got Borderlands in there, and I've got Trine, I think, and I'm just like in limbo. So those are all in progress, but I'm not really touching them.
You finished Arkham Asylum.
Yes,
right?
I did finish Arkham Asylum. That one kind of hooked. You know, occasionally a game will hook into you to the point where you cannot stop. Like, you know,
right.
And that one's not so difficult that I got super stuck. So that one went well. And I'm very tempted to get Arkham City because that's on there now. And like, I want to so bad, but I'm, you know, trying to hold the line, as it were.
Well, I'm currently playing through Uncharted 3, and it's kind of slow going for me. I'm not quite digging it as much as I liked Uncharted 2. It's okay, but it's not, I don't know, it's not quite there for me yet. And part of the reason for that is that I'm just not playing video games as frequently or as often as I was when I was playing Uncharted 2, for a number of different reasons, most of which are my baby. But then I also fired up Assassin's Creed for the 360, which I've been sitting on. I actually bought this game. No, I rented it from Gamefly, sorry. I rented it from Gamefly, played it for like 3 to 4 hours, decided I was done with it, and sent it back. And then Assassin's Creed 2 came out, and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and Assassin's Creed Revelations, and pretty much everyone on the planet can't seem to stop talking about how much they love those games. So I decided when I saw the first one on sale for like a couple bucks, it was probably like 10 bucks max, I decided to go ahead and pick it back up just because I want to play through the series in order. I have a thing with that, even though I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, just give up, Andy. I mean, your original instinct was correct. Just get rid of the game. I did the exact same thing. Send it right back. So you don't need to play all the way. Don't torture yourself.
I think at least I'm going to try to play for a while. I may not get all the way through. It's a pretty big game. It's a huge world, and there's a ton of stuff you can do. There's 1,000 flags that are all completely unnecessary. But mainly, I just don't like the way it feels. Your character, Altair, feels like he's underwater at all times. They give you like lots of cool things you can do, but if you do any of them around guards, they'll stab you. Are the other ones? Do they fix this problem, or is it the same? Have you played the other Assassin's Creed games?
I played 2. I have Brotherhood sitting for me on Live. I got it for $1. Didn't add to my backlog, but
you should.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed 2 though. I like the cleaning up of the combat. I think that they smoothed out a little bit of the exploratory elements, and it just felt like a lot better game. I don't know if one specific thing pushed it over the edge for me, but it just felt like it felt more like the difference between like an Xbox and a 360 game. It really felt like a big leap. Just everything was sort of refined.
Gotcha. I think part of my problem is that I have a really hard time with most open world games, and Assassin's Creed is very much an open world game. They give you a place to go to do things, but you can wander around forever and do whatever you want, saving random citizens from mugging soldiers and whatnot. But
I'm with you. All of that.
Yeah, there are tangible benefits of doing that, right?
I got all the way through 2 without doing the side crap.
Okay.
I just went full bore through it and ignored all that other stuff. I think that's why I enjoyed it.
That's what I'm leaning towards this time, too. Because I want to play through the first Mass Effect as well, but I know for a fact that I'm going to ignore all the side quests when I do that, because everyone says Mass Effect 2 is better, and I just want to get to it.
No, I think Mass Effect 1 is worth playing. See, I think you've got it backwards. You need to play Mass Effect 1. You need to ignore Assassin's Creed 1.
Okay. Well, I think one of the reasons I'm so drawn to Mass Effect 1 is that it seems like one of the big appeals of Mass Effect 2 is the attachment to the story and the characters, and you don't really get that if you skip the first game, right?
Right, and I just thought the first one was a good game.
Yeah, I don't know. I played like the first 3 hours of it and thought it was okay, but I need to go back to it. I have a good reason to now, because I can't afford new games. So I guess I have to.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I play it very methodically, though. I don't know if you're trying to play it through as a straight shooter or if you're taking the time to pause for everything. But I paused all the time and played it more like I would a Baldur's Gate than anything else. And that I think it's more geared towards that mindset of playing, kind of like a Knights of the Old Republic system. So if you play it like that and take your time, you're not caught up in the moment-to-moment cover-based shooting, I think you're going to have more fun with it. I don't know if you're doing that already.
I haven't played through that many of the action sequences, to be honest. The last thing that happened to me in the game was I became a... what, Scepter, I think it is?
Spectre,
yeah. I became a Spectre. Like, that was the last thing I did. So basically, I get the impression that I played through, like, the four-hour prologue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual game started, and I stopped playing.
Right.
That's the other thing, is that some of these games I get stuck on and never finish just because they have, like... And I know that I've loved games that are guilty of the exact same thing, but this whole idea of having, like, a three-hour introductory sequence... Guys, you're killing me here.
Yeah.
And I know Skyward Sword did it too, but I don't think an exception.
I didn't think that was that bad compared. I mean, I didn't really feel the burn on the opening on that one. I think people. Well, I guess I just like Zelda enough that I turn a blind eye. Maybe
raced through the front part of that game, and then someone asked me to find the little girl. I just stopped. I need to get back to playing it, but
Is that necessary to do that, or is that a side thing to find the little girl?
I don't know. Is it
a side thing? I'm pretty sure.
I think it's a side thing, but it's a pretty big, it's a pretty major side thing.
Oh,
yeah. Comparatively,
I had to play through Zelda quickly because I had a baby coming in like 3 weeks, and I wanted also on top of that, I wanted to get the review out before the game launched. And Neil was kind enough to lend it to me like 2 weeks before the game came out, so I had like I think 10 days to play it, and I actually managed to finish it in those 10 days.
Wow,
it was. Quite a bit of work, and I think honestly I probably gave it a higher score than I would have if I didn't have that time constraint, because the only thing that I was thinking about lowering the score for was the filling, the padding and the filler, and I thought that was more of a problem. I was making it out to be more of a problem than it actually was because I was playing it so quickly,
right.
And then it turned out to be the one thing everyone else complained about, so apparently it wasn't just me.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mind it that much. I never do. So I kind of shrug that stuff off. I don't know. Usually. I wasn't a big fan of the swimming bit toward the end, but I did like the bit where you have to get all your gear back. That was actually really cool. But I like stealth games, so I'm a weirdo in that sense. So,
oh,
yeah.
I'm dreading that part now. I had not.
Whoops! Did I spoil? I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't care. Better or worse than the start of Wind Waker?
It's better. It's a lot better than that.
The Silent Realm stuff? I think it's better.
No. I'm talking about. Well, spoiler alert. I'm talking about when
stealth segment.
The stealth segment toward the end, not Silent Realm, a different one.
Oh,
is better than the. Oh. I think it's better than the Forsaken Fortress bit.
I didn't like it, but I think it's better than the Forsaken Fortress.
I like that stuff.
I didn't like the Forsaken Fortress bit because it seemed kind of hard to, like, find your way around.
Yeah, this one was more straightforward and more kind of interesting things happened, but I will leave it at that. I liked it. Whatever.
I'm pouring over your guys' backlog.
Yeah, I have a couple of points about my backlog that I want to bring up. First of all, sometimes it's hard for me to count whether or not I am done with a game because... There are, you know, most games nowadays have multiple levels of completeness that you can hit. And so, like, right now, I'm not sure if I consider myself having beaten, like, Mario Kart 7 because I have unlocked all the tracks in the mirror mode, and I've got gold, I think, on almost all of them, but not all of them. So, I don't know if that means I've beaten it or not. And it's hard for me to decide what my... standard is on that, and then like new Super Mario Brothers. I'm sorry, Super Mario 3D Land is similar. I have beaten the main game, and I've gotten really far in the post game stuff, but I have not beaten every post game level. So I'm not sure, like, if that means. I mean, I want to get back into it, but do I need to like call that beaten or not? You know, it's tough to tell with some games.
I think in the case of Kart, I've always assumed that once you get a gold in every cup, you've beaten the game.
Right, so I still need to do that in mirror mode then, but yeah, okay. I'm getting there.
I never did that on the Wii version. I think I got somewhere in the middle of the 150 CCs and kind of gave up.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, we've mentioned it yet, but I'm using a website called backloggery.com, which is really cool. It's a web, I mean, you know that gaming backlogs are a big issue for a lot of people when somebody makes a big website devoted simply to listing the games you haven't beaten. And and it's pretty cool. You can go and add all your games by system, and it will give you little charts and graphs about what you've beaten, what you haven't beaten. You get little badges for beating games, and you can add friends, so it's a little bit social. It's really just to keep track of your own stuff. So I have right now 125 unfinished games on there, and it says 8 unplayed at all, so that means 8 I own that I have not played, which is probably lower than I thought. And I have actually a bunch of games on Steam that I bought that I can't even run right now because my computer won't do it, like Left 4 Dead 2. And Andy kind of pointed me at a bunch of sales or something on Steam like a year ago or more and said, get these. And I said, okay. And then my computer wouldn't really play them. So I'm waiting for an upgrade. So
right. So
that's part of it. I can't even
which
try.
Games are those? Like Left 4 Dead. Looking at your Steam log now.
Left 4 Dead 2,
Left 4 Dead 2
is
one of them.
I think, honestly, and this is going to sound terrible, but like Half-Life 2, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Half-Life
2. I think those are Windows and... Do they have a Mac version of...
Yeah.
See, that maybe... I bought these before Steam kind of went Mac, so I'm not sure if that... I haven't even tried that one yet.
I think you did try it, and it said your system wasn't wasn't capable of running it. Like, it just stopped you
weird.
From even trying.
Which is weird. I think feel like it should be able to. And then, like, I think Team Fortress 2, so all that kind of Valve stuff. So I'm waiting on that. And... StarCraft 2 I can play, but I have to put everything at the absolute lowest graphical settings completely, and it's kind of a pain. So I haven't quite beaten that, so I'm waiting again on a better system. Hopefully.
When you and I bought CNC Red Alert 3,
yeah, we played a bit of that
co-op and played it for like a one or two missions, but it was pretty slow on both of our machines. So
yeah.
I didn't get too far.
I could get back into that if I had a good machine. I really want to play RE5 because I'm a big Resident Evil fan, and I don't have an HD console, really. So I might, and I guess there's no Mac version, but I can run it in boot camp if I get a decent computer. So I want to get that. Anyway, I don't own that yet, though.
Nathan and I actually picked up RE5 for Steam, mm-hmm. and it was a bit of a debacle trying to play it online because the Steam version of it actually passes through to games for Windows Live, which is the Xbox Live Microsoft equivalent for Windows.
Okay.
And it's bizarre because both Steam and games for Windows Live have their own like voice chat components and friend list components.
Oh.
And so it took a good like what, half an hour, 45 minutes to like figure out how to get it to work.
It's a mess.
It's weird.
But
weird.
It did work.
Fun once you get it to work.
Played it for like an hour or two. We got a couple hours into the game. I thought playing it with a mouse and keyboard was a disaster. I still haven't picked up a real gamepad for my PC yet.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking eventually I'm going to come across an Xbox 360 controller for like $15, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and then the other thing I wanted to bring up is the way the App Store, I like iOS a lot, and I play a lot of games on there, and I know Nathan does for sure, and I think Andy does.
Yeah.
And the way the pricing works on there and the way the impulse buys are so easy on there, like, I have real bad habits of getting a game that looks cool. I've researched it for all of 10 seconds by reading the first 3 reviews, and then I'll get it, and sometimes it's cool, and sometimes it's okay, but most of the time I'll kind of forget about it after a day. There are a few exceptions to that. So that kind of screwed up my habits. And then they have all these indie bundles online, like the Humble Indie Bundle thing, which are really great deals. Those are things where you can buy 5 games for a price that you name, and the money goes to charity and stuff. And they have really cool games in there, usually like Braid and World of Goo and Binding of Isaac and Meat Boy. Yeah, I got Meat Boy and Bit Trip Runner both for my computer for that, and I've barely touched either of them. So I have like a big. I've done like every single one of those. There's been three or four, and so I have a big like chunk of games that I haven't even touched because of that. So like my impulse buy habits have been kind of screwy.
Yeah, my iOS backlog is just shameful. It's not even on my backloggery account. I know.
Yeah.
It would be a significant effort just for me to try.
It would take you hours to do that. Yeah.
In fact, there are games that I would not be able to put in there because I have downloaded them and hence deleted them.
Sure.
Like, and never touched them, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, some of them, a good portion of those I had codes for. So I don't feel bad, but
yeah,
I don't know. There are like a couple I know I just never even touched.
Yep, it happens. It happens.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I'm going to go to my grave with some of these games never played or certainly never beaten, and makes me sad. I'm going to put it on my tombstone. I'm going to put the number of unfinished games on my gravestone so people can judge me. I had so many more games to play. That's what it'll say.
All right. Yeah. So after you finish what you're playing right now, what are you guys gonna? What's the first true backlog title you're gonna jump to after you're finished with whatever you're starting at the moment?
I have a heck of a lot of stuff I could choose from. I really super. You know, people don't seem to like it that much, but I started Super Paper Mario, and I own that, and I got a little bit ways into it, and I liked it a lot, and I kind of just stopped at some point, and.
Yeah, I don't finish that either.
I kind of want to get back into that. I like the way it looks a lot. I don't know. It looks cool. So I kind of want to start that back up. Not sure.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to talk about the game I'm playing right now.
Okay.
Tactics Ogre. Have either of you played that one?
No.
But
I love strategy. I love strategy RPGs like... Fire Emblem. I love them. So
right.
I assume that's what this is.
That's what it is. It's.
I really want to. Yeah, I would love to play it.
In the vein, maybe you should pick it up, add it to your backlog.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's in the vein of Final Fantasy Tactics. It's. I understand it's its predecessor.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I've been reading up a lot about. Look, I am the saddest nerd. I I really want to play Dungeons & Dragons, but I don't have enough friends.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that puts me right between
that is the saddest
nerd and a LARPer.
Oh, no.
I have my fiance, but I love her too much to do that to her.
Yeah,
so,
inflict that. Yeah.
So from what I've heard from D&D podcasts and just like sitting there reading the rule book to the D&D red box that I bought. This is about as close as I'm going to get. It's got all the same kind of rule sets, same move action, minor moves or minor actions, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of other little strategic things that you get to play out on this, colorful chessboard with your knights and warriors and mages and stuff. And I just love this game. And I gave up on it because it was too hard. And then I kind of came back once we talked about this podcast, and I put my full gaming force behind it. I beat the battle that I was stuck on, and I've gotten like through five more battles since. It's really tough, but this podcast has already
pushed
me.
What system are you playing this on?
I'm playing it on the PSP, but
okay,
I think you.
Because there's a GBA one.
Available. Yeah, I think that was Knights of Lotus or something.
Right.
I played that a long time ago, and I loved it.
Okay.
The thing I liked about that one was that the units that had spears would stab through multiple enemies, and I thought that was really
sweet.
This game does the same thing. It's got also got a lot of other neat elements to it. It's really deep.
What's the difference between Tactics Ogre and Ogre Battle? They're the same series, right?
Ogre Battle is like real time. isn't it?
Yeah, that's what
it's
I
more,
thought.
It's much more real time. It's not turn. I could be wrong. I have not played it, and I did listen through the whole retroactive thing on this, even though I never played it.
I played for the 64, and that was real time. So if that premise carries backwards through the series, and
that's what
the real time ones.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I think the word tactics separates this.
They're more of a macro. They're more of a macro. Right. It's more of a macro level when on those games.
Right.
I played FF Tactics for GBA, and I played it for a while, but my frustration with that game was you really needed to have the strategy guide from the very beginning to have any idea what the hell you were doing.
Really?
There were so many – I thought so. There were so many different ways you could evolve your character, and if you didn't know what you were doing, it just kind of seemed like experimentation is fine if you don't mind playing it for 150 hours. But if you really wanted to like focus your character development, you had to know what to do. You had to know how to customize.
Yeah, I think I played it for 150 hours. I think that was my solution.
Fair enough. I haven't played through a strategy RPG since Shining Force 2. I've tried a few of them. I put a lot of time into the Fire Emblem for GBA, but I got burned. I think I get to the point where I don't want to keep playing if I'm going to lose a character. And I got to a battle where I couldn't pass it without losing a character and just kind of stopped.
Yeah, I don't like that premise.
That's the reason I like Fire Emblem. I like it.
I like how Tactics Ogre manages it. You have about 3 turns to save your downed party member, which I think is fair. It's a little more reasonable because not only does Tactics Ogre let you jump back through about 50 turns, which is really nice.
Wow.
Although I find that most of the time if I'm losing in a battle, it's a matter of me not having prepared properly.
Yeah,
as opposed
right.
to, oh, I should have attacked the griffin instead of the whatever. But, I like having a window of time. Like, you know what? These guys rushed me. They did a critical hit, and I didn't know they could wipe me out just, like, in a single, you know, blow. But let me rectify it. Like, give me a chance. I don't like the, your guy's dead, so you either A, restart this whole battle, or, just deal with it. I don't
know. Now, later, right, later, some Fire Emblem games have save points in the battle, so you don't necessarily always have to do the whole thing again, and you gotta be, and it's good to be really strategic about when you act, because they're actually, I think this is true of, this is definitely true of the DS one, Shadow Dragon, I believe.
Shadow Dragon.
There's tiles in the board that are like these blue circles, and if you take a character to it, it'll give you a save or a checkpoint option, and you can save. So you choose when you want to save, and sometimes you have to be strategic about when you do that, because you kind of want to do that when you are in a position of strength or whatever. So it's a little bit more forgiving that way. If you lose a guy, you got to go back.
Thing.
Yeah, it's one time. Use it once and then it goes away. And some maps have 2 or 3 of them. You know, they don't always just one. So that's a little bit better. But most of the games I don't think have that. But I'm a fan.
I've been a fan. Sacred Stones doesn't.
I'm super OCD kind of. I mean, about certain things like in games, and that tickles my OCD. Fancy, I guess, maybe, to keep everybody alive and restart. Like, I don't mind it too much because I want to, like, have the perfect game, if you will, or figure out the perfect strategy or whatever. But that also has led to me not really beating any of them. I don't know if I've beaten a single one. I've gotten very far in most Fire Emblem games I've played. I've played 3 or 4. And I have not beaten a single one, so that might be why.
Right on.
Yeah. But, I still have fun with it.
Well, I think after I finish Resident Evil Revelations, and I'm getting pretty close to the end there. I'm on like the 10th chapter, I think, out of 12. I think I'm going to finally put in the copy of Phantom Hourglass that I've been sitting on since the day it came out. I've played like 8 hours of this, I think, in the past, maybe not quite that much, and I eventually never picked it back up. But I don't like there being Zelda games out there that I haven't played, and there's a few of them, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm borrowing Chrono Trigger from Zach, but I've already played the first, 5 or 6 hours of Chrono Trigger, and it's really been difficult for me to want to replay it now again, even just to get through it. so I can get to the new stuff.
Chrono Trigger is on my backlog right now, and I've never played it. And it is, I am a few hours in, and I have kind of left it by the wayside. Not that I didn't like it, but I am, you know, more games.
RPGs
more
are
games,
very difficult for me to play through at this point. I don't know why, but I have this thing where I tend to fall asleep very easily, and I think it's just because I don't get enough sleep ever.
Yeah.
I haven't for years. So if I play a video game, like either A, after like 9:30 p.m., or B, an RPG ever, I tend to fall asleep within a half an hour of playing it. It's also why I don't read as often as I should, because I can't pick up a book after, you know, the sun goes down without falling asleep 5 minutes into it. I need to play more RPGs. I like the idea of playing them, but I rarely get very far into them before I just lose interest.
I've only beaten two RPGs in my entire life, and I can name them. Yeah, I'm not a big RPG guy, and there's only been two that hooked me enough to beat them, and that was Mario & Luigi, Bowser's Inside Story, and Dragon Quest IX, both very, very good. But for some reason, because I didn't have to grind in either one, as far as I can remember, and that's pretty much why.
That's a big factor in it.
That's exactly why I beat them.
You know, I'm lucky enough, because I just moved, and my method of commute is now... I spend 2 hours every day on a train, so
yeah. Oh, that's good.
A lot of time on my hands. Yeah. That's why I'm playing on the PSP right now, because this is, you know, this is prime time now. I can sit down every day and get in a couple hours of games.
That's excellent.
I wish I had that.
It's really been awesome. I got all the way through Final Fantasy IX just recently, and I was actually really proud of finishing that, because I don't think I've ever finished Final Fantasy outside of the Tactics games and Final Fantasy 1. So I was happy about that. And I think I'm actually going to push through a lot of these PSP games, even though they're all mammoth RPGs. I do get about 10 hours a week. So,
I've never been a big RPG guy, but I've wanted to be. And so I'm actually really excited about Xenoblade. Like I said, I have that pre-ordered, and I am... people gushing about it over and over and over. Like, I really hope I get into it and don't, like, get stuck in after 2 hours and have to, you know, like, force myself to play it again. I'm a little worried about that, but we'll see.
I may have to borrow that from you, Grant.
You know what? And that's the other thing I wanted to say. The solution to this whole problem is, if you know other people with backlogs and they don't want to buy games, you just trade. That's all you got to do. And I'm going to try doing that, like, pretty much until I have everything beaten I want to beat, you know.
Right. So, yeah. And just ignore the other games in your own backlog and...
Yeah, just trade. All these just get new games.
Make all these arrangements to get games from other people.
That's true, yeah. The problem with that, and then you can't do that for DLC or digital games too, usually. So that's the other problem.
All my PSP Go games are not tradable.
You're not trading those. Yeah. Nope.
Well, I can't.
So, just mail your PSP to someone.
You can do that. Mail. Yeah.
I'll give you my Steam login.
There you go.
Play my backlog.
I had Super Meat Boy on Steam for like a year and never played it, just because I really don't have a setup at my house right now where I can easily play PC games. My PC is sort of in the basement separate from the rest of the house, and I kind of have to, you know, leave my wife and child and hide out in the basement for hours to play a PC game, and that just kind of feels like I may as well, yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. That's why I play a lot of handheld stuff, because it allows us to sort of hang out together while I'm playing video games, and she can watch Gossip Girl, and I can shoot zombies. It works.
And that's why I'm looking forward to the Wii U.
That is a very appealing...
Yes.
Now,
my concern is that most of the Wii U games won't support playing only on the tablet. They'll support multi-screen.
I hope not.
But the Wii games should all support, well, at least the ones that don't require pointing or...
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. I have a very time imagining how that's going to work with... Because most every Wii game at least uses the pointer for menu selection stuff.
Right.
Most of them do. I'm really, like... It's very fuzzy to me how this whole thing is going to work. Very, very fuzzy. Yeah. I guess we'll see soon.
Well,
but...
Grant, do you share your television?
No, I don't. So it's not an issue. It's not an issue for me, but I'm still just confused about it.
Yeah, so that's what I'm looking for. And actually,
basically, like, me playing video games is equivalent to me saying to my wife, hey, do you mind watching me play video games for a couple hours?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and you feel terrible, and you don't end up playing them. And actually, I was looking into getting a Vita, and I know this is the Backlog Podcast, but just because they're adding enhanced remote play feature.
For your PS3, so, yeah.
Right. That sounds perfect for me. Because then I can sit there and do exactly what the Wii U would be doing and, you know, feasibly play through Kingdoms of Amalur on my Vita while my fiance watches whatever she wants to.
And yeah.
That would actually
or PlayStation Home.
That's pretty amazing.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I guess that's all we have for the first backlog post-game podcast. I think the plan is we're going to check in every month or so and kind of just discuss our backlog progress and if we've cheated on our, you know, attempt to not buy video games and the attempt to play the ones we've already bought. I'm going to post I guess I'm going to ask Scott or Mike, whoever posts this episode, to link to all three of our backlogs. So
you listeners can... Do we have some form of punishment for not... Like, what's the...
I don't
What's
know.
The harm? Personal shame?
Yeah, I mean, this is we're accountable to the entire internet now because the entire internet listens to this podcast.
Everyone is watching.
They all
President
do.
President Obama is listening to this.
Right, exactly.
It'll probably be on Weekend Update if we screw up on SNL, so.
I think so.
Tread lightly.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
So vain.
Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll do this again in a month, and feel free to look at our backlogs and tell us which games we should be focusing on or ignoring.
Yeah.
Yes. And these links, I guess,
for what I should get to next.
Right.
If someone wants to tell me, hey, you know, once you're done with your current game, play this.
Yeah, I'm open to that too. Me too. And there's a bunch of them. I'm not even sure, like, if I even want to play them. But you know, it's possible that I'm just not giving them a chance or whatever. So.
My backlog is sitting at only 74 games right now because I went through the other day and removed games that I'm really not going to play. Right. Like, I have them, but I'm not going to. There's no way I'm going to play Flower Works on anywhere.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Mine's at 90 because I'm not being honest with myself.
Yeah. mine says 125. And then also, if the listeners want to feel better about themselves, which is, you know, what I also want, I go to John Linneman's and look at his. And it says 283 for unfinished. So that is awesome. Ooh. And makes me feel much better about myself. And I'm calling him out publicly now by saying that probably, but it's okay. We're all friends. Again, backloggery.com. Like, if you want to use that site and you have your own backlog, it's really cool. And if you want to find me, I'm G Buell on there. G-B-U-E-L-L.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Do you have Trine on PS3?
I have Trine on the PC.
Damn it. Well, I have it on PS3 because I was going to play co-op with you, but...
Maybe I'll get it
for the PS3. That's not helping. I'm willing to bet there's a few games on here we could probably do co-op.
Sure.
You know what? Yeah, we should... I know RE5 is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I want to get Portal 2 so bad and my computer won't run it yet, and... Oh, well.
Oh, yeah. Nathan and I played through that on PC a couple of months ago, and it was fantastic.
Yeah,
actually, no, you played it on PS3, that's right, because I bought one copy of it, we both played it, and then we sold half the copy.
Oh, wow.
Shh.
Sorry.
They're listening.
Sorry, Gabe. Sorry, Gabe Newell.
I think this
His beard will comfort him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this podcast is going to end up resulting in us buying more games, so we shouldn't stop, like, tempting each other, you know.
All right, that's it for this segment of Connectivity. I am signing off.
All right.
Bye.
See ya.